In this session, you know, we're dealing with innovative programs, and as Tanisha said, our specialization is we specialize in promising practices and model programs for very rural and frontier areas. One of the organizations that I work with, I wear a couple hats, but one of them is the National Center for Frontier Communities, and it's about 10 years old, but it's the only organization in the United States that really focuses on the most isolated and remote areas of the United States, that being the frontier. So we've been around for the organization over 10 years, but for over 25 years have really been advocating for those isolated areas. And as most people who work in very rural and frontier areas realize that access is a key issue. You have populations out there serving national parks, serving tribal lands, and so forth, but access is a real barrier to accessing care. We work with a national panel of experts who specialize in rural and frontier health from across the nation. I don't know if any of you know any of these people, but they're great to work with. And they provide us feedback as we look at various programs dealing with rural and frontier health. So one thing that we know is about every 10 years with the census, we actually contact all the state offices of rural health, and we ask them to determine what counties they designate as frontier. And they can determine or designate it based on their own definition. So it might be density only. Some people take into consideration density, distance, as well as access to care. So each state determines, but what we do know is the amount of the very rural areas is actually shrinking. And oftentimes with those shrinking or fewer number of communities comes less access to care and health services. We also know that in the most remote, isolated communities that you're more likely to have uninsured, they're less likely to have a personal primary care provider. They are more likely to not access care due to cost. And they also, this is an example of dental cleaning, but they're also much less likely to receive any kind of preventative services. And so, you know, as we look to the future, there's a lot of work going on nationally that we're aware of in terms of what does the future of rural health care look like. And we know that primary health care systems is going to take a key role. Also, integrated systems, where I think there's a lot of talk right now about moving more towards integrated systems, care coordination, and hopefully, you know, some new financing structures that will favor rural and frontier healthcare. So just to give you a little bit of background, with the National Center for Frontier Communities and our expert panel, in 2011 we did an asset and gaps analysis, and they came up with four strategies. One of their four strategies they wanted to focus on was to develop, implement, and sustain model programs that address the unique needs of frontier communities. And so I'm going to give you an example of the five. These were the five programs that we looked at. I think most people are familiar with community health workers, and we know that there's a lot going on around and with community health workers throughout the country. We were specifically interested in the care coordination role of community health workers, and so I'll go into that. There's Medicare demonstration model that's just wrapping up. It's called the Frontier Extended Stay Clinic. And we'll talk about that. There is, it's just completed its first year, another demonstration model that is based out of Montana, and it's called the Frontier Community Health Integration Project. And then we'll talk a little bit about behavioral health aides and dental therapists. So, you know, why look at the community health worker model for care coordination? One is, in very rural and remote areas, we know that there's severe shortages of healthcare providers, and so that's why there's such a key interest in rural and frontier areas around using community health workers, because they are key. They're part of their communities, and they can kind of make that connection, link that person who may have healthcare needs to a provider. We also know that community health worker, the whole field is growing. There are now at least 17 state organizations or associations for community health workers. We have 3 national organizations, and they're getting a lot of attention and a lot of popularity. We also know that there's growing research around health outcomes. We know that there's several studies. Some of them are disease-specific, some are very broad, but we know that the evidence is mounting on the effectiveness of community health workers. Care coordination, as many of people realize, is really it's a key component of patient-centered medical homes as well as the ACA, and there are incentives to do better care coordination. And so states are beginning to recognize community health workers and care coordination as billable services. So this was particularly interest to rural and frontier. So what we did is we looked at what's happening across the United States around the community health worker model for care coordination. And one is, in terms of the core competencies or core functions, we're still trying to figure that out in terms of what exactly is a community health worker and their core functions. Even though there's a lot of agreement, there's still not a standard definition. There are 5 states that have community health worker training programs and credentialing regulations, and at least 6 states are in the process of formalizing their community health worker workforce development. And usually that oftentimes takes some type of state legislative action in order to get balls rolling, to get the resources, to recognize, you know, who's going to provide the training, who can't, setting standards and so forth. There's growing interest in rural and frontier states to define and develop care coordination functions of the community health workers, even though nationally we really don't have a standardized definition of care coordination. If you ask an MD what is care coordination, he or she may have one definition. If you ask a nurse, he or she may have another. If you ask a community health worker. And so there needs to be kind of a more unified understanding of what exactly care coordination is and what all the roles of the various players are. We also know that the ACA and other policies provide promising environment for the development and implementation of community health worker programs. And so as it rolls out and is implemented, we're hoping to see more incentives for organizations. There's 4 states that provide reimbursement if the community health worker is under the supervision of a licensed provider. And so we're hoping that opportunities for being able to bill for care coordination using community health workers, that opportunities continue to grow. In other states, you might have managed care organizations that are actually contracting with organizations one-on-one to provide care coordination through community health workers. So, you know, just summing this up, this model up, some of the issues are around workforce issues, the training requirements, the scope, where you have certification versus not certification, you're needing to standardize competencies and training. We need funding. We need better funding mechanisms for sustainability. There are regulatory barriers to care coordination. They're, you know, not having any kind of standard around care coordination, the definition needs to be tightened up, but that's all up to each individual state. And cost effectiveness and quality of care, there still needs to be a little bit more research in terms of cost effectiveness. There is actually a lot of really good studies that are just coming out showing the cost effectiveness of community health worker care coordination, but it could certainly use a lot more evidence. So in terms of recommendations, you know, it has to do with clarifying the scope of practice, both in terms of the community health worker core competencies, but also having a better understanding of care coordination. We need to look at new financing models that are flexible and focus on patient health outcomes rather than just a cost per unit or fee for service model. And care coordination needs to be valued and supported by private insurance and managed care organizations in addition to public payers. Training needs to happen. As we know, that's emerging, but not only at the community health worker level, but it also needs to be integrated into the provider level of training so that they have a better understanding that community health workers do have an important role within the whole healthcare team. Quality assurance and supervision is important, and when you're talking about really remote and frontier areas, it's, you know, if you can make sure that supervision is available via video conference or phone, you know, having on-site supervision is just extremely difficult for very rural and remote areas. Further research is needed, and of course, you know, expanding information and knowledge among all healthcare providers so that community health workers are integrated into that treatment team. So that was the first model we looked at. The next model is the Frontier Extended Stay Clinic. Right now, this is a demonstration project. It's wrapping up. It has one more year. It'll actually expire. It's a national project that was approved through national legislation. And what this service is, it converts clinics so that patients needing overnight care without clinical necessity for transfer to a hospital can actually stay there at the clinic and receive care for up to 48 hours. After 48 hours, they either have to be discharged or they have to be transferred up to a major clinic. And this is really great for really isolated communities where it's difficult, where maybe the weather or the road conditions or whatever does not allow people to get out. And so right now there are five sites, and they're all up in Alaska where the demonstration site is, but it's very, patients are really happy with it, providers are really happy with it. So, but right now with the national legislation, there are certain eligibility criteria, and it says that the location must be in a frontier area, it must be 75 miles from a closest hospital, and the closest hospital is not accessible by public transportation. I left a word off there. It has to, in order to be a Frontier Extended Stay Clinic, it must be either public, private, not-for-profit, tax-exempt corporation. And then there are certain staffing requirements. They actually started out being much more stringent, but then they realized that in order to get the staffing that you need for 24/7, if someone is at the Frontier Extended Stay Clinic, they loosen them up. So as the demonstration project progressed, they now recognize that you can have like a physician's assistant, an RN, a CNS, an LPN, and even a certified community health aide on duty when the clinic has patients under observation. But then you always have someone who's accessible, you know, to be reached via telephone. So just to give people an idea of what a demonstration project is like, one that is endorsed and funded through national efforts, I mean, this effort actually started way back in 1997. And then, and right now, so we're talking, you know, 16 years, this is not a quick process for getting new programs recognized, but there's been a lot of success and a lot of positive results from this project, and like we said, the demonstration ends in next year in 2013, so we're hoping that this wonderful project not only will be sustained, but if there are other states that are interested in duplicating this project, that there are resources available for that as well. So there is some research related to this. There's the University of Alaska has found positive research. There's a National Research Center out of the University of Iowa that also had a evaluation. And then CMS, Mathematica, is currently doing an evaluation. But what the findings are cost savings due to avoided transfer costs. There's positive impact on clinical quality. Improved emergency response capacity, the patient and family experience is improved, and the rural communities really support this effort. There are policy briefs nationally where we're trying to get that 75-mile requirement reduced to 35 miles, and of course we're working really hard to make sure that this promising practice is maintained. So I only have a couple minutes left, so I'm going to go through these very, very quickly. These are just in the beginning stages, the last three models. We have the Frontier Community Health Integration Demonstration Project. And what this is it's a demonstration project that's focused in Montana. And the purpose is to test new Frontier models to increase the access to and improve payments, acute care, extended care, and essential health care services provided under Medicaid and Medicare. And once again, there are eligibility requirements. These are focusing, and there's a lot of the critical access hospitals are really struggling right now, and this is an option for critical access hospitals. And what it's doing is trying to integrate the care among eight rural hospitals in Montana, and they also use community health worker care coordination as part of that service delivery system. So what they, I'm going to skip through this. So once again, this is a demonstration project. Right now, they were awarded funding in 2010, and they had to come up with a series of papers about the model, and then last year they were awarded to do the community health worker care coordination within that model. Right now we have North Dakota and Alaska reviewing what happened in Montana. Wyoming stepped out. Originally Wyoming was supposed to also give feedback, but they pulled out. And then hopefully the CMS will actually put out, we're hoping early next year, request for proposals for more demonstration projects using this particular model based on what's been learned in Montana. So with dental therapists and behavioral health aides, we will say that this is just an emerging promising practice that we're looking at. One is we know that internationally it's been around for 50 years, dental therapists, but it's just emerging in the United States. It's operating currently in Alaska and Minnesota, and it provides, additional care. It's not a dentist, but they are allowed, depending on the state and depending on what the qualifications and standards are, that you get people who are trained who can do some of the less intrusive procedures so that people are getting some type of oral health care, which is better than no oral health care. And so, and I believe handouts are accessible. I know I sent handouts, but this just gives a little bit of background about what's happening in Minnesota as well as Alaska. And once again, we're watching this in terms of getting care out to real remote and frontier areas around oral health. This is a practice that we'll continue to review and support. And then with behavioral health aides, there's lots happening. And once again, it's peer counselors, peer specialists, mental health first aid, behavioral health aides, case managers. There's all kinds of models that are emerging to help provide a link to a licensed professional therapist, but it's the behavioral health aides that are out in the community who can kind of spot what's going on, do an intervention, get that person linked up to support. And like we said, there's lots of programs happening nationally. We know that in each state, but there's little published research on the models. Exchanging information is very difficult because, unlike community health workers, they don't have any organized associations yet and so forth. There's no nationally recognized core competencies for most types of behavioral health aides, and many behavioral health aides programs lack any kind of stable source of funding. And so, once again, this is an area that, you know, it's in its infancy, that we'll continue to track and as a promising practice. But we know that, once again, like with oral health care and a lot of primary health care, behavioral health shortages in rural areas is very severe. And so having some type of assistance there on the ground is really essential. So thank you.